Matt Williamson and Ryan McDowell.
Welcome into another edition of the Dynasty Blueprint. I'm your host, Ryan McDowell, joined as always by Matt Williamson. Matt, how are you doing this week?
I'm fantastic, man. How are you?
Doing well. Had some playoff defeats, but also had some playoff wins. So
one still, over me, by the way.
That's right. Yes. That one wasn't even close. I just assumed that was going to happen. You've still got your undefeated team, though, right, going into action this week?
I do, but my quarterback situation is Wentz, Bradford, and Tyrod Taylor.
Oh.
And I'm undefeated. Tyrod said he's playing this week.
You better throw all the fab money at Nick Foles, which is just sad.
I shouldn't say this to you because you'll probably block me, but Cutler's available also.
No, I'm out of it in that one, sadly. Yeah. Let me ask you this, though, before we jump into our show today. You have said on here several times that Wentz is your number one dynasty quarterback. Yeah. So with this injury, he's obviously out for the year, and there's already speculation about how much off-season, preseason action he misses. Maybe he misses camp. Maybe he even misses the beginning of the season. What do your rankings and your value of him specifically look like now?
I don't think it changes. I mean, if you're not the contender and somebody said, hey, I'll give you Wentz for Rodgers, do you say yes?
I mean, just to buy back years, yeah, probably.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I think it's really early and I'm not a doctor, but my hunch is he'll be fine by the opener.
Well, Matt, we've got another awesome show today. We had some really good feedback from our show last week covering the AFC backfields, kind of with an eye towards 2018, predicting who the starters might be and just kind of assessing the overall value of each AFC backfield along with the individual players that currently make that up. Of course, we had Adam Spinks, the RB scout, to do that for us, and he is back again this week to cover the NFC. Adam, how's it going?
It's going great, guys. It's good to talk to you again. I'm excited. Yeah, I thought that last week went really well, and I'm definitely excited about doing the NFC. When I first did the look through, I kind of thought in my head that the NFC might be the more difficult one to go through. But as I did more of it the last couple of days, I think the AFC was the harder part. So this might be a little easier to go through.
Okay. I was just thinking the same thing as I scanned it now, that there's not as much controversy on this side.
Yep.
Adam, I told you this last week off the air as soon as we finished, and I'm glad to tell you here for our listeners to hear as well. I just learned so much every time I talk to you. This will be tonight will be your third appearance on our show. And of course, I've checked out your website and your Twitter feed many times and always learned something from you. I hope our listeners do as well.
Yeah, I really appreciate that. You know, for someone that's just came on to the social media scene, I guess, and has been doing this stuff for his own good, I guess, for a long time, it is nice to hear that, you know, whenever you come out and you put a product out and it gets well received in the first year you do it. Yeah, it just validates that, you know, maybe the time and effort that I've put in the past has been worthwhile.
Ryan, is Adam our first three-time guest? This is kind of cheating because it's a back-to-back two-parter. But
yeah, maybe. Let's see, Curtis Patrick, maybe? I think we had Curtis on three times, possibly.
Three? Okay. Yeah,
maybe. But he's definitely among the elite there. So just to give everybody a reminder as to what we're doing here, kind of already mentioned it, but we're going to go team by team, looking at the NFC teams, specifically, of course, their backfields, their running backs. And we're going to ask Adam to label each player as either elite, safe, an upside player, or simply just a player to avoid. And we'll also get his opinion on who is the likely 2018 starter for each team. And Adam, just a quick recap. I was really interested in your elite labels from last week. So the AFC, you had Joe Mixon as an elite player, Leonard Fournette, of course, Le'Veon Bell, Derrick Henry, and I feel like I'm forgetting someone. Maybe it was only four. We've got Gordon Hunt. I know those were both in the
Fournette, if you didn't mention him.
Safe category.
He was on the list.
Okay. Yeah, the only other one that most people would probably expect to be that wasn't would be Kareem Hunt.
Right. Okay. We must have had four then. All right. So four guys, Mixon, Fournette, Bell, and Henry. We'll see how the NFC fares according to your grades.
Real quick, Ryan, I'm sorry to interrupt. But nope. Do you think that Mixon and Henry are a little less valued than that in the dynasty community?
Probably. Yeah, I think both of those guys are, you could say, I guess, maybe the end of the top 10 or end of that RB1 range. And I think most dynasty owners would take Gordon over them, would take Hunt over them, and a couple or a few of these NFC running backs that we're going to talk about today as well. So, yeah, I mean, if you're listening to this and you're sold on what Adam said last week, you believe in his work, which I do, then that should make Henry and Mixon pretty strong buy candidates this offseason.
Well, one note on Henry, I guess, before we start. If Murray leaves, which is a possibility in the offseason, I would think that the rocket ship is going to come out on him in the offseason. So if you are going to buy him, I think you have to do it as soon as trading opens up and just have that conviction that you really do think that Murray's going to leave. Because if you don't, and he does leave, the price is going to get significant, and it's just going to be, you know, you're going to be killing yourself looking back at what you could have had.
I think that's a great point. And I could also see them adding a Chris Thompson like guy.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Like I mentioned on the previous podcast, he's not going to be at 350 touches, but he's going to be at a level where you think in that offense, if they can get the line going again, that he'll be very, very productive. And it's the same thing with Mixon. Should Cincinnati go out and sign, you know, a productive offensive lineman or two, then anybody that's paying attention is going to realize that that was the problem with the Bengals, and you're not going to be able to buy Mixon at a discount anymore.
Let's get into the NFC teams, Adam. We'll start with the Arizona Cardinals. David Johnson, I would say, entrenched as the starter there, despite the injury he played in week one and then has missed the rest of the season. There was some hope that maybe he would come back as the season went along, but they just really weren't in contention. Supposedly that injury was not healing maybe as well as they hoped it would. So we won't see him anymore this season. But he has maintained his high dynasty value, still locked in as a first round dynasty startup pick. And then, of course, also there in Arizona, you've got Adrian Peterson, who they brought in after that injury. Peterson is signed for 2 years, so through this year and next. And he got off to that, I guess we could say, a hot start. He got off to a good start once he was traded out of New Orleans. And it's just funny now to me that I remember some people saying, oh, maybe Peterson could threaten Johnson for touches. And now several weeks into his Cardinals career, that just seems crazy to me. But how worried are you about the injury with Johnson? Do you still value him as an elite asset?
Oh, 100%. And to take it even further, I play in one dynasty league. That's just the way I play. I believe in, like, hey, the dynasty league that I play in is the only league in the entire world. And so the David Johnson that got injured in week one is the only David Johnson in the entire world, and he's on my team. so that was a bummer all year. But just to put it in perspective on David Johnson, because we haven't seen him in a while, his last 21 games, he's averaged 150 total yards and 25 touchdowns during that span. So we're talking, honestly, we're talking the best of the best. If it's Bell or it's Johnson, and to me it still is. And because of Bell's situation and because of they wrote him in the dirt, honestly, I fully expect David Johnson to be my RB1 going in the next season in dynasty circles. Adrian Peterson, that situation doesn't bother me at all. To me, he's an avoid. He's going to be 33 years old. You did mention that he's under contract next year, but while it may be relatively low money at like $3.5 million, there's no dead money if they want to get out of it. And if he does go to Arizona and stay with Arizona and David Johnson's there, he is a backup 100%. This is no timeshare. There's no timeshare when David Johnson's on the field. He does things that no one can do. And really that even includes Bell, just because of the receiving. As good as I think Bell is in the receiving game, I think David Johnson's capable of playing everyday receiver in the NFL. So that's just a little bit difference between the two of them, where Bell's a better running back, I guess, than David Johnson. But yeah, I would fully expect him to be RB1.
Adam, I agree, and he's going to be my RB1 as well. My only reservation is this. What if Palmer retires? What if Larry retires? I know they gave him another year, and you got Blaine Gabbert or a first-round rookie and a bad offensive line and not much weaponry, and all of a sudden that becomes a dismal offense.
And Arians could retire as well.
And Arians could retire. I mean, it could be a real transition year.
The Arians is the one that would concern me more than Palmer. Yeah. Just because of how he uses him all over the field. And I wouldn't say that a new offensive coordinator wouldn't do the same thing, but we know that Arians does. So that's why you'd want to stick with him. Yeah. I mean, those are all valid concerns, but when you look at that versus, you know, Le'Veon Bell with the touch factor and being a free agent. And then you look at, you know, if you go past that, you're looking at the rookies, which is fine. I have no problem with that, but none of the rookies outside of, you know, maybe Kamara have the skill set to do anything near what David Johnson could do, which is, I mean, realistically, if he's on a 16 game pace with a good offense, he's a thousand potential back. And that's unheard of, really. I mean, that's something that you just don't see.
100% true. And we'll get the Zeke, we'll get the Gurley, but I think they have a case too.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Adam, let's look at the Atlanta Falcons. I guess we could say maybe one of the most talented backfields, two players that dynasty owners are very interested in, Devontae Freeman and Tevin Coleman, both of those guys locked in at least one more year, I believe. So they'll both be there in 2018 unless something crazy happens. Coleman had that crazy touchdown production a year ago and probably got overvalued in dynasty and in redraft leagues as well. He had a pretty crazy ADP in MFL 10s and things like that. And then Freeman has missed a little bit of time this year. How are you valuing these two guys relative to each other and relative to other backs across the league?
Well, on film, I like both these backs a lot. I particularly do like Coleman just because of how he can hit the hole so quickly and get by people, which is just a nice thing to have as an offense. But their biggest issue is each other. And like you mentioned, their biggest issue is that they're both under contract for 2018. And I don't see any reason to think that they're not going to cannibalize each other, which still means that Freeman's going to be a low-end RB1 type talent and Coleman will be playable. But one thing on Freeman that I would look at is how Sarkisian is using him in the passing game, which has been low. He has one game with over three receptions. Over the last three games, he has one reception. And then last season, if you look at his receptions, he had four or more seven times. So he was a factor in that part of the offense, and he just hasn't been in Sarkisian's offense. That's been more the Tevin Coleman role. They just eat each other even more than normal.
Yeah, the coaching staff, you talked about potential coaching changes with the Cardinals. The coaching change that we've seen in Atlanta is the one, to me, that has really affected those two players and really the entire Falcons offense. So I don't know. I haven't really necessarily heard any rumblings of this, but I wouldn't be surprised if they kind of made a desperation change there, even after one year with Sarkisian.
It seems like a long way away, but Coleman is a free agent a year from now, right?
Right.
I think that's correct. Yeah.
And I would be shocked if they, I mean, in 2019, I don't think they're in the same backfield.
Right.
Oh, I would completely agree. I think Tevin Coleman is a starting running back and a well above average starting running back in this league. I mean, he would play for at least half the teams in the league.
Yeah, I agree with you.
So what are you labeling these guys as far as our four categories?
Well, it's hard to say upside just because we know what they are and they are going to be eating each other's lunch, but I'm going to say safe on both. I'm not going to put Freeman in the elite category, but both these guys are as safe as you can get just because we basically know what their stats are going to be before the season starts.
Yeah.
And of course they have the benefit that if the other one gets hurt for a game or two, that their stock goes up.
Absolutely.
We've got another backfield duo in Carolina, although probably not quite as talented. Jonathan Stewart has been the longtime starter there. And at this point, I think fantasy owners have just grown frustrated with his ho-hum production, even though he had a great game last week with three touchdowns. And then the rookie Christian McCaffrey, who's essentially a wide receiver with that running back label. Adam, tell us what your thoughts are on these two players.
Well, one thing that surprised me on Jonathan Stewart is that he's had 10 or more carries in every game but one, and I definitely didn't think that would happen. This year, I didn't think he'd be close to a 200 carry back. I really thought that they would use McCaffrey more in the run game. But as far as him coming back, I think he would. He's under contract, and you know Carolina loves the guy. So I would label him safe. But as far as McCaffrey, obviously the word is upside. Like you mentioned, he's essentially a receiver. But my hope is that maybe he can be used in the run game more. Shula's offense hasn't done a real good job of putting him in good positions and running. He's done a little better in the passing game as far as getting him Like one thing I saw a few weeks ago was they went to goal line, shifted about a goal line at the 1 yard line, put him in the slot, and then, you know, he ran an out pattern for a touchdown. That's really an unstoppable play with him in the lineup. And I wish they would use him a little bit more in that area. One thing on McCaffrey, as far as the metrics we look at, which is the talking about the potential tackle point, his yards after the potential tackle point, first 8 weeks were dreadful. It was like 1.2 yards per carry, which is awful. That number's dramatically changed over the last few weeks. It's like 2.5 yards per carry after. So he has improved in that aspect. And, you know, for someone that should be able to avoid tackles and make people miss, you would think that number would stay high. But I was very surprised that it was just so low for the longest period of time this season.
Do you agree that if we see any change, maybe it's a fourth round pick, 230-pound guy to be the eventual Stewart type deal?
Yeah, definitely. One problem that they have is they've been productive and they've been winning. So Mike Shula is going to stick around. And I'm not the biggest Mike Shula fan as far as just the way he schemes an offense. But yeah, I think you're right that Stewart is going to be 31 years old. They have to get another back, and they're not going to give McCaffrey 250 carries. So yeah, absolutely.
They might not give him 25 carries. I don't know. he's not been good, and they haven't given him much of a chance lately. So yeah, it's just that wide receiver. If you're in a PPR league, great. If not, I'm not sure I'd spend much on him. Adam, the Bears backfield has been really frustrating for me. I loved what we saw the first 2, 3, 4 weeks of the season from Tariq Cohen. Just his usage has been so sporadic, so unpredictable. When he gets the ball, when he gets touches, he makes big plays. Yet for some reason, and I guess that reason is probably John Fox, he doesn't get those consistent touches. And of course, we've got Jordan Howard there as the starter, who's had he's had some hits and misses this season as well. But I'd say overall a solid second season. What do you think on Howard, and can we expect more usage from Cohen next year?
Yeah, I think what you said on Howard is right. He's been good. He hasn't been great, but he has had plenty of good numbers just because of how many times he's given the ball. The biggest problem he has, and it might sound odd, is that John Fox might not be back. And John Fox has committed to him over the course of almost 32 regular season games to run him whenever they're losing. It doesn't matter if they're down by 20. He'll still get carries. And if you bring in another coaching staff, I'll always see that as a potential negative to running back, but just because running back, once again, is a commodity that can be changed very quickly by someone that wants to run a different scheme. So you always have that as a concern when they bring an entirely new coaching staff. And if Chicago doesn't, they've lost their mind. But I'm going to label him safe. He's safe. And then as far as Cohen, I'm going to label him safe because he's going to have the same similar role that he has this year. He got off to a pretty ridiculous start. I mean, we're talking him and Chris Thompson were putting up these numbers that were not sustainable on a point per touch basis. So I think we maybe jumped on that a little bit too hard and think that they were going to be, Darren Sproles turbo version, where he was going to be a fantasy option every single week. And that's not the case. Honestly, if you're going to get Darren Sproles out of him, I think you're probably pushing it just for a normal Darren Sproles for the rest of his fantasy career.
I 100% agree. I don't think they'll be. I don't think there's any reason to change the backfield.
No.
My only worry is kind of like you said, but to take it a step further, I really think Jordan Howard is a pure, excellent zone runner. And if by chance the new guy comes in and really screws around with the scheme, I think he could be exposed a little bit.
Yeah, and the Bears have a really good, talented offensive line. His yards before the potential tackle point have been solid, rock solid all year long. So he's had a lot of help. But yeah, you're right. He is a very good zone blocking runner. I don't know how he's going to be in a power run game. I haven't seen it, so it's difficult to say. But the potential is always there that would change to that. And another thing with him, he still doesn't catch the ball well. So they still play him on third down more than what I expect, but that's got to change at some point.
For sure.
Adam, one of the biggest stories of the NFL season has been Ezekiel Elliott and the suspension that he is currently serving. Just about done with that. We can expect him back in a couple more weeks. It's obvious he is entrenched as the Dallas starter there. They also have Alfred Morris and Rod Smith that they've been trotting out during the suspension. Morris is a free agent, and Smith, I think, has shown some upside. We don't want to have too much recency bias with that after his just dominant fourth quarter against the Giants. But I think all in all, he has shown pretty well. With Smith, do you think he can actually carve out some type of third down role, or are they just going to continue to feed Zeke no matter what?
Oh, I think as long as Jason Garrett's the coach, it's feed Zeke no matter what. Just a few numbers that I pulled that are, I mean, it almost doesn't even make sense, but he's had 20 or more carries in 19 of his 23 games. He's at 80 rushing yards or more in every game his entire career except for two. He scored a touchdown at least once in 15 of 23 games, and his offensive line's under contract for all of 2018. You know, they're not going to have to deal with the Zach Martin problem until 2019. And what's really nuts is he hasn't played in a month and he's still an RB1. So it almost doesn't even make sense how many points he scored this year with all the – we thought a downturn in his offensive line, which, you know, Tyron Smith was hurt and he didn't look nearly as good as he has in the past. So that was an issue. And they're starting – you know, they lost Doug Free, and that was another issue. But he still produces at a ridiculous rate. And I see no reason that Jerry Jones is not going to ride him into the ground, pick up that fifth-year option, run him into the ground one more time, and then be done with him.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. I mean, it's just going to be all Zeke all the time.
Yes.
All right. So if you're a dynasty owner, I think we can all agree Morris is in a void. He has not necessarily been productive through this four or five game stretch that he's had the chance for a lead role. And also, like I said, entering free agency. Do you think Smith is worth a roster spot in dynasty leagues?
Oh, sure, if he's cheap. I think he's safe. He'll have a role going into next year. Like you said, Alfred Morris is 30 years old. Will be 30 years old. 30-year-old free agent running backs is not where you want to go spend your money. But yeah, I think Rod Smith has shown enough to be a viable backup. But just remember, the viable backup in Dallas means that Zeke has to get suspended again or get hurt for it to be a place where you actually score any points. So it's the handcuff that doesn't score anything.
Yeah.
It's like Pittsburgh.
James Conner. Yeah. Exactly. That's what All right. Next, the Detroit Lions. Oh, talk about frustrating. So I count five running backs that are on rosters in the majority of my dynasty leagues. And I'm not sure any of them are good. Amir Abdullah, the starter, though I'm not sure if we can even say he's the starter anymore. Recent word is that he's been benched and he didn't play last week. Maybe he was a healthy scratch. They were hesitant to put a label on that. Theo Riddick, they've been giving more carries to him over the past couple weeks and it's had some success. And then the rookie Green, Zenner, Washington. Tell us what tell us what we need to know about the Lions backfield.
Well, PPR, I think Riddick is still safe. And Riddick is actually a much better NFL player on film than he ever could be in fantasy. Riddick's really a terrific blocker, and I don't think a lot of people would really expect that. They just see him catching balls and all they care about is the fantasy stats. But for a guy that's not real big, he has no problem mixing it up. And that's really been Abdullah's biggest problem, is that we think that he would be an excellent receiver and he just doesn't get the opportunity because of how good Riddick is in the receiving game and blocking. And so Abdullah doesn't get those snaps that he needs to be productive. I thought he actually played pretty well to start the season, and he wasn't getting a lot of love just because of how poor the Lions were blocking. But he's that guy that I've mentioned in the offseason that was just going to piss everybody off because he wasn't going to score touchdowns and he wasn't going to catch the ball. and those we really think that he is a good receiver. And I think, honestly, if on another team, so this is my hope, is that maybe he gets cut, is that he is Theo Riddick for another team. So someone that can catch 50-plus balls in a season. And maybe that could be, you know, like I mentioned on the AFC, maybe he goes to San Diego or LA and he becomes the third down back there and he can have a 50 catch season. But I don't think it's going to happen in Detroit. If he stays in Detroit, then I'm going to call it an avoid. But if he does leave, then I'll say his upside and PPR especially.
I got to think they end up with Geis or even Crowell or Hyde or somebody that's bigger that can be a bell cow.
And I'm assuming the bigger backs there, Green, Zenner, Washington, we don't care about any of those, correct?
Well, we just haven't seen anything from Green. It's still so new. You have to just label them not a clue. But as far as, Zenner and Washington, they're a void.
I was actually surprised they didn't give Green more carries last week. He was somewhat productive a couple weeks ago and when Abdullah was out, and then it was almost all Riddick last week. So, yeah, we'll see what happens with Green. Next up, the Packers. This is a tough one to analyze here. Three running backs. I have all three of these guys, I think, in my top 30 dynasty running backs, which mostly means I don't know what they're going to do. Aaron Jones, Jamal Williams, the pair of rookies who have both had a chance to start at times this year. And then Ty Montgomery, of course, the wide receiver turned running back who's battled some injuries this season and currently on the injured reserve. Just take it away, Adam. Tell us all about the Packers.
Well, difficult would be the starting point on where you're going to go with this. Coming out of college, I liked Aaron Jones quite a bit. I liked him significantly more than Jamal Williams, and he definitely showcased a lot of that talent, you know, especially against Dallas when they played. So I still think that as far as the more complete back between him and Williams, I do think it's Jones, despite the fact that Williams is really done well receiving the ball lately, which I didn't think he could do. I thought he was more just of a blocking third down back and then a bruising running back. And he's shown a little bit more than that. You know, honestly, it's just going to come down to the situation where you're just going to have to choose one. And I would choose whatever one is cheaper in the offseason. It would be my suggestion. As far as Ty Montgomery, someone brought up a good point. It was actually David Speaks on our pod on my team. He's a big Packer fan. He would tell you he's a Packer owner. But he made a good point that there's a possibility that Jordy Nelson and Davante Adams are gone next year just because of age and contract. So what about Ty Montgomery going back to receiver? And that intrigued me because I do think he has ability to play that role, especially in the slot role. And if, you know, Cobb is hit or miss, I know you love Cobb, but he's hit or miss as much as anybody. So, you know, maybe Montgomery goes back to that, or maybe he just plays more receiver than he does running back, but can still mix it up a little bit. Yeah, I think you got to go with the cheaper option, which probably right now is Aaron Jones, and just see what you get in the offseason. They're all good situations, though, because Green Bay's running back is going to score points.
Are we tabbing all these guys as upside plays?
I have, yeah, all my notes, they're all upside, even Montgomery.
I would put some offers in for Jones. You know, just like you said, you liked him better coming out of school. It seems like right now that Williams is a flavor of the month, but I think in the end, Jones is going to rise to the top.
I really thought that Williams was a plotter coming out. That was my evaluation of him. And so far, that's kind of been proven wrong. You know, he's had some gaping holes on some of his longer runs. But, yeah, I think that Jones is the more talented back.
Mm-hmm. All right, Adam, we'll take the heat off of you a little bit. Let's talk about the Rams. Todd Gurley, we know the story there after a pretty terrible 2016 season. New coaching staff, new everything, and Gurley is all of a sudden a stud again. How have you analyzed his 2017 season?
He's fantastic. This is the perfect one to go to after Green Bay, where I'm not quite sure. I mean, this is the elite of the elite, is Todd Gurley. I was pushing people that the Rams were going to be better with Sean McVay because they had, I think it was 4,200 yards of total offense last year, and that is all-time low. So there was no possible way that that number wasn't going to go up by 1,000 yards, and it's going to go way past that. So I hope that people were listening to that, you know, as someone that was new to the industry, I guess, and listened to that Todd Gurley was not a bust, that to be a successful running back in the league, you have to have blocking. It does not work without it, and they did not have it last year, and they do this year. Whitworth has definitely helped a lot. You know, more importantly, they can move the ball through the passing game with Goff, and he's accurate, and they pick up first downs, which puts them in a position to score more touchdowns, which is what Gurley's been excellent at all year. Yeah, McVay's going to stay there long-term. Goff is there long-term. Gurley's there long-term. Whatever receiver you like is there long-term. There's nothing that you possibly can say bad, really, about Todd Gurley. You want him, and you need to buy him up at whatever the price is.
I think you can make a strong case that he's number one. I mean, he's not mine. I like Johnson better, but I might take him over Bell.
Yeah, I think I'm with you on him over Bell. I think, once again, like I mentioned, Bell is the better player, but I have to deal with all the stuff that I have with Bell, with the 440 touches and, you know, potential of leaving that offense. And I know for sure that Gurley's offense is going to be good next year, which is crazy to say after last year, but 100% I believe that there will be a good offense next year.
Adam, Malcolm Brown actually got a little bit of sleeper hype at one point in the season and then had that injury. Is he even worth a roster spot, or is he an avoid for you?
Well, oddly enough, Malcolm Brown, I'm from North Texas, and Malcolm Brown was a big deal in high school, and I mean a big deal. He was going to be the next Ricky Williams, and you know everybody was on his hype train, especially when he signed with UT, and then he goes to UT, and he's just kind of okay. And honestly, that's kind of what we've seen in the NFL. He's just kind of okay, so to me, if he was going to break out, it would have been a long time ago. He was just crushing people in high school, and we had this hype factor behind him, and it just hasn't happened. So no, he's a void. He's just a guy.
He's a Waldman favorite from what I remember, I think, coming out of school. And just thinking about it, I mean, the Rams all of a sudden don't have a ton of needs, and having a really good running back has been very, very important to them. I wonder if they say, let's throw a third-round pick at a guy just for insurance.
Sure. Yeah, and someone that could play third down. I mean, not that Gurley's not right. good at third down. He's very good. But they had Dunbar, and they brought him in for a reason, thinking that he could play third down, and that never really happened. So sure, absolutely. I think they could bring in someone that would alleviate some of the load that Gurley has. You don't want a running back to continuously get 300 carries, despite the fact of what Pittsburgh does with Le'Veon Bell.
All right, back to a tough one, the Vikings. Maybe this isn't so tough. Dalvin Cook suffered the injury this year. He was playing really well before that. Both of his backups / replacements have played well at times. Jerick McKinnon, Latavius Murray. McKinnon is entering free agency. Kind of like we heard with Adrian Peterson, there was at least some discussion of, can one of these guys steal touches from Dalvin Cook when healthy in 2018? I don't think so. It sounds like you don't think so either, Adam.
No, zero chance. Dalvin Cook is awesome. Dalvin Cook, whenever he left, was the leader on my books as far as yards after potential tackle point. It was nearly 3, and that's been surpassed by a couple individuals, but he's wonderful. You want everything to do with Dalvin Cook. I'm not an expert in injuries. I've had an ACL problem, so I know about that, but this was a long time ago, so technology's come a long way in the medical industry. So I know that, like we mentioned before, that people get back quick, and I would fully expect Dalvin Cook to get back quick as well. McKinnon's, you know, like you said, he's a free agent. He's safe. I think he'll be back. I don't see any reason why they won't. But as far as Murray, I did look at this. He's owed like $11.5 million over the next 2 years. But if they cut him, they save 10. So why on earth would he stay? You know, the problem is they signed him to be a starting running back, and then they fell into Cook. So it's one of those things. He was brought in to do a job, and then they found someone better after they made the decision to put him in the starting lineup. I would think he would be gone. But 100%, hey, the great thing about Minnesota is their line has played significantly better than it did last year. Last year, they were dreadful. And this year, they have been solid for 3 running backs. That always says a lot when the starter leaves and then the backups come in and they're still productive. I always look at that as a plus for the line, just because we know that one is talented, but if all 3 can do it, then it's a very positive news for going forward for Cook.
Yeah, with McKinnon, I guess I've been under the assumption that he is going to chase a payday. And I think he's played well enough to get some interest from around the league. Obviously, he knows that if he stays there, he's second fiddle for the rest of his career. So because of that, I kind of could see him leaving. But you make a good point on Murray probably being gone as well. Do you think Murray's in a void with that contract?
Oh, he has to be.
Yeah.
Yeah. And really, I don't think that he's very good. I think he's an athletic freak that when the hole is open, he can go in a hurry, but he doesn't do much more than that.
Okay. And then it sounds like you've got Cook in that elite tier.
Yes. Cook will be elite.
All right. Next up, the New Orleans Saints. If Zeke Elliott is not the story of the season, it's the Saints backfield, Ingram, Kamara, and then they have a couple of young pieces, Trey Edmonds and Jonathan Williams. Just take it away. Gush on Alvin Kamara.
So this is a good one because I write notes. I'm a real meticulous person on notes. I like to be prepared for everything. And the notes that I have of the Saints, they're so long on these two players that I just stopped and I was like, okay, that's enough. I'll be talking for 20 minutes if I wanted to. But just a crazy note on Kamara before I get into actual metrics. His sophomore season at Tennessee, he averaged 6.5 yards per carry. His junior season at Tennessee averaged 5.8. In the NFL, he averages 7. So it's easier for him in the NFL than it was in the SEC. It doesn't even make sense. And this is someone, you know, I don't want to say I missed on, but I did not have him in my top 5 backs. I don't think a lot of people did, just really because there wasn't a lot of film on him. So it's very difficult to grade someone when the limited amount of film that you have, and it's TV film, it's not all 22 film. You know, he's on pace for 800 to 800, and the only 7 players have ever done that in NFL history. So that's a crazy stat that you have. What's amazing on film for me is that the best comp I can give him isn't an actual NFL player. It's he's a cat. And it means that he always seems to land on his feet no matter what situation he's in. He could be in the most awkward levitating position, but he always lands with balance on his feet. And that's how he's gaining these yards after the potential tackle point at a ridiculous rate. It's over 3 yards, which is only Kamara and Derrick Henry have that on my metrics for yards after the potential tackle point of 3 yards per carry. But, you know, he doesn't win on power, and his speed is good, but it's not, you know, Chris Johnson speed, but he wins on balance, which is something that's just awesome to watch on film. I love watching him. As far as
his
Ingram,
balance is crazy.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, it's the best in the league to me. And that's saying a lot because of Bell and DJ have great balance as well. But he's just in a whole different level as far as a athlete on that. And then as far as Ingram, I'm going to label him safe. I'll go back to Kamara. He's obviously elite. But as far as Ingram, he's safe, and he's such a complete player too. One thing I like about him is he does everything good. It may not be great in any category, but he has no negatives to me. He blocks well, he catches well, he runs hard, he runs with agility. He's on pace for 1,500 total yards, which I don't think a lot of people really consider what that total is going to be for the end of the year. And then for both of them, their offensive line has been awesome. And the great thing about their offensive line is they're locked up. And one crazy number that I had on them when I was looking over the cap was just how much money they're spending on the offensive line, how committed they were to making a change on that line. If you look at next year, three of their top four highest cap numbers are Armstead, Warford, and Unger. It's just behind Cam Hayward. So, I mean, they are spending the dollars to fix this line, and they've certainly done that. But if you go back as far as the metrics on potential tackle point, the group average for everybody that I look at is around 1.9 yards before they meet a potential tackler for the entire group. Ingram and Kamara are averaging over 3 yards. So it's a full yard before they see the potential tackler versus the whole group, which is a crazy number when you think that both of them are getting that. So yeah, all in, both of them for next year. Their offense is going to be great. The only thing that could possibly happen is Drew Brees leaves for whatever reason, which why at this point would he do that with the team that they've put together? So
maybe Sean Payton leaves.
Sure, yeah, that would be horrific, but right. I don't see the point now. You know, they've right. built something, they got the line working. Why? And he's got Kamara, so why would you not want to play with that toy for as long as you can?
Yeah, earlier in the season, I think we had heard rumors that both Brees and Peyton could be gone, and in fact, we heard rumors that that Ingram could be gone. I think all three at this point are pretty safe. Adam, when at this time of year, when my dynasty teams get eliminated, I start looking at some of those stash players I can grab off the waiver wire and hope that they gain some value. Both Trey Edmonds and Jonathan Williams are two of those guys I'm looking to stash on the off chance that Ingram does for some reason leave. And we did even see that report that if he's first team, all NFL, he becomes a free agent. I think that's correct on that. But there's some loophole where he could become a free agent this offseason. We haven't seen much, obviously, from Edmonds or Williams, but have you done any work on those guys? Are they worth anything to you?
Yeah, if we're talking dart throws, I don't see any problem dart throwing Jonathan Williams. I like Jonathan Williams a lot coming out of college. Like I mentioned on the AFC, I liked him more than Collins. Coming out of Arkansas, I thought he was a good back, and I thought that he had some good film with Buffalo, and it just, for whatever reason, that turned sour quickly. And you know, he like you mentioned, he is in a good situation. Should Ingram get that designation and become free and want to make some money, I think he's owed $6 million next year. I don't think that would be any situation where they would cut him. Absolutely dart throw Jonathan Williams in a heartbeat.
All right, let's look at the New York Giants. This is maybe the ugliest backfield in the entire league. They've been led this year by Orleans Darkwa. They've got the rookie Wayne Gallman. I really liked Shane Vereen and his opportunity coming into the season as a PPR guy, and they just haven't used him very much. He hasn't been especially good when they have used him. And then Paul Perkins, I think he's a bust. Adam, you probably agree with me, but let's hear it on this foursome of Giants RBs.
Yep, I will echo everything you said. Dark was a free agent. He's in a void. To me, he's just a guy. Gallman, he's safe. He'll be on the team next year. If you want a dart throw, I guess, dart throw it on Gallman. I was 100% with you on Vereen. I thought in PPR he would be an excellent late round throw. You know, the last pick, I picked up Vrain in plenty of leagues as the last pick in my draft, thinking that would happen. And it just hasn't happened. And probably one of the reasons why is because he plays on third down, and they tend to play one third down and then they punt. So it'd be very difficult for him to score any points when they don't play a second third down because they can't move the ball. But yeah, this is a complete revamp, complete new general manager, complete new coaching staff. They will probably be picking very high. I don't know if they're going to be willing to go high enough and for 3 straight years pick a top five running back with whoever you like between Barkley or guys, who knows. I'm not ready at that point to talk about who I like more, but yeah, I would fully expect a rookie running back to be leading the way next year.
Yeah, we pretty much don't want any of these guys. Vereen is also a free agent. We talked about the Patriots last week. Lewis and Burkhead are both free agents. I mean, it would be the Bill Belichick move to bring Vereen back in, right?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, if you once again, he's free. I mean, you're not going to pay anything for him. So if you want to take that role and just see what happens, yeah, why not?
The Philadelphia Eagles, another crowded backfield, at least when you're looking at dynasty rosters, as many as five, maybe even six of these running backs on dynasty rosters currently. Of course, they made the trade for Jay Ajayi in the middle of the season. They've got LeGarrette Blount and Corey Clement. Smallwood has kind of been pushed down the line after that trade. And then the two pass catchers who both have dealt with injuries this year, Darren Sproles, the veteran, and the rookie Pumphrey. I'm not sure if we can count on either of those guys. Jay Ajayi is really the story here. Even after the trade, he hasn't had a ton of success. Is that due to his own play on the field, or could it be, you know, learning a new scheme, learning a new offense, et cetera?
I think the second part, he's only been there a month. He's probably just now learning the full playbook. And to me, what I've seen on film, I've really liked when he gets the opportunity. And it looked like finally last week they started to push that and give him the double-digit carries. I'm someone that loved Jay Ajayi coming in the season. He was a top five back for me. That's how much I like Jay Ajayi. So I'm going to label him as upside just because I know that I will probably lose all my followers if I tell the truth and label him as elite. but to me, a running back in that offense is going to be deadly, and I fully expect it to be Ajayi. Everybody else is, I mean, Blount is a free agent. Sproles are a free agent. They're nearly as old as I am. They're in a void. Clement is safe. He'll probably be back on the team. Everybody else is just not happening. They brought in Ajayi for a reason. I fully expect that next year he's going to be the lead back. You know, one thing he has struggles with at Miami were, if you look at his true box numbers we talked about last week, where it's blockers minus defenders, Miami had nothing that would scare any team. So they would pound the box with, you know, eight or nine guys, and they would be in a regular 11 set or, you know, maybe even a 21 set, and they couldn't block them. So they just didn't have enough people. So he would always be having a defender that was in the backfield before he could get going. And now those true box numbers have, you know, gone down dramatically with Philadelphia. And that's why his numbers just on box score have gone up greatly. And if you want to look at just box score, well, I mentioned on Twitter today that you could take his 71-yard rush away, the longest one he's had all season. Just take that away if you want to play that game. And he's still averaging 5.5 yards as an Eagle, which is that's good. You know, and his everything on his PTP numbers has gone up. He looks more like he did last year. And honestly, last year he had more yards after the potential tackle point on an average basis than even Le'Veon Bell did, as far as what I graded. Well, I didn't show it because I wasn't on Twitter last year, but he was my number one rated back after the potential tackle point of all of 2016. And honestly, if I was just giving out my favorite guy to watch on film last year, it would have been more than likely Ajayi. I love the guy, so I'm all in.
I think this is the lowest his value will be for a long time. You know, I mean, he just started to get some carries. Wentz goes down. I think they're going to lean on him more. You know, weather's going to be an issue going forward. We're going to see him in the playoffs. And now he's comfortable, good line. And then Wentz will come back, and all offseason, everyone's going to be buying up Ajayi like crazy, thinking it's going to be the lead back in an elite offense. And they'll probably be right.
Yep. I'm 100% agree. He's the one player I've tried to trade for the most this entire season, even with Miami. And then he moves to Philly, and I couldn't get a deal done because, you know, the hype factor was there. And then by the time people saw that he wasn't getting a lot of carries, we were past trade deadline. So now, like Matt mentioned, we're going to see him through the playoffs, and I fully expect him to start taking more of a significant role of the committee. And then the price is just going to be too much for me again.
I don't think they'll be using the word committee in Philadelphia much longer.
Yes, I'd agree.
Interesting. All right, San Francisco 49ers, definitely a team in transition. Really, this entire season has been a transition for them with a new new coaching staff, new general manager, now a new quarterback. Could they have a new running back next season? Carlos Hyde is a free agent after this year. He's had a good, solid season. They've given some work to the rookie Matt Breda, and then they also have some deep guys, a couple other rookies, Jeremy McNichols, Joe Williams. Those are guys that Dynasty owners spent second-round picks on at some point in the offseason. So a couple of disappointments there. I don't know if you see anything long-term with either of those guys. Let's start with Hyde, though. Do you think he moves, and how's that going to affect his value?
Well, if Bell resigns with Pittsburgh, I have him labeled as the top free agent running back in the offseason. So he'll be the most sought-after player at that position. And he's been really good on film. He plays for a terrible team that can't block, and he still somehow manages to carve out these yards on a consistent basis. I think he's been great. But he fits Shanahan's system a lot better than I thought he would. I was a little skeptical how that was all going to work out, especially with the beating the fist on the table for Joe Williams or whatever that nonsense was for a fifth-round pick. And then, you know, Breida comes in, and when I watch Breida, I see a lightning back. He reminds me a lot of Mack, where he's on the field, or Marlon Mack is who I'm talking about, where he can just make this crazy play and look so explosive, but then you just see all the negatives, which is he doesn't always read the hole correctly, he doesn't catch the ball that great. But yeah, you know, he's got talent. I'm gonna label Breida upside, but I'm labeling Hyde safe. My hope is that he signs back with San Francisco, but if he doesn't, like I said, he'll be the most sought after running back on my list. So he'll be in a prime position to be another contributing factor to your teams next year.
They have money. I would expect them to bring him back.
I hope so.
But maybe they look at it and say, hey, we have the fourth pick in the draft. We'll just take that Barkley kid.
Sure. Yeah, definitely could.
Adam, back to that topic of offseason stashes, Jeremy McNichols, he was drafted by the Bucs and then cut. Joe Williams, you mentioned the whole pounding the table for him. That didn't exactly work out. He ended up on the injured reserve list. Are you bothering with either one of those guys?
I didn't care for Joe Williams. I never got the pounding on the fist that I didn't see it. But as far as McNichols, I did like a lot of what he was showing. But this is one of those odd opportunities where TV actually showed you something, where we got to see the behind the scenes with you know, the HBO, and we kind of saw that he doesn't pick up a playbook real quick, and that's not a good thing. Whenever you can't understand the playbook, you know, after that long, I don't want to label anybody dumb, but it's just one of those things. Sometimes it's a difficult thing. It's a complex playbook, and if you can't figure out where you're supposed to go or who you're supposed to block, there's no possible way that a coach is going to put you on the field and trust their Jimmy Garoppolo, they're going to pay $20 million for you to block for. So, to me, they're all a void. If I'm going to take the dart throw on any of them, it's Breida, just because I think he's a supreme athlete.
So if they let Hyde walk or he just opts to sign elsewhere, can Breida be a starter there, or are they going to have to do something else?
Well, I would fully expect a committee at that point. I don't think he's a – from what I've seen, the limited film that we have on him on NFL and in an NFL environment, because his college film is not, it's option. I don't think you're going to see a 200 plus carry back. You just may see a, you know, the 120 committee back.
Okay.
They have way too much cap room and draft pick capital to allow that to happen, unless there's injuries.
Next up, the Seattle Seahawks. They've tried, I think they've tried five or six different starters this year. None of them have really worked, either because of injury or simply just poor play. So they've got Eddie Lacy. They've got Thomas Rawls. Carson, the rookie, and ProSize have both been injured. And then the past month or so, we've seen Mike Davis and the McKissick kid. Adam, I don't know what to do with this group. Everybody still, not everybody, but a lot of people still seem to like CJ ProSize. He's been an avoid for me from the start. Carson is really the only one I want to take a shot on. How do you feel about this big group?
Completely agree. Yeah, I don't see how anybody at this point can want to put basket of dollars into ProSize or you know, Rawls again, or even McKissick or Davis. I mean, Davis has looked fairly well, but he's just a guy. The only one that's potentially not just a guy is Carson, who, oddly enough, for a guy that I personally don't think is a really good athlete and runs really stiff, he somehow breaks a lot of tackles, and not just due to power. He was breaking a lot of tackles due to agility. It was one of those weird situations where he looked like, I hate to say it, but he's like one of us goes out and plays with the 14-year-old kid and does that stupid juke where you kind of jump up and then you move your hips and you think that you're actually making a move, but it's not, but it worked. You see that with Carson. It's kind of funny, but somehow it worked. It's what everybody would tell you not to do, which is make that stupid jump up in the air before you move. It worked. And, you know, I think Pete liked him. So I would love to see him come back this season and just see what they do with them. I think that'd be a good thing going forward for their backfield to have Carson come back and take the lead role. Everybody else to me is in a void, especially Rawls and Lacey. I've seen enough of that nonsense to know that's not happening.
So Lacey is a free agent. This feels like it could just be the end of the road for him. I mean, I almost wonder if he's even going to get a contract at all. But beyond that, if they can look at this group and say that they bring Davis, McKissick, Rawls, Carson, and Procise into camp, I wonder if they even bother to make a move other than that, other than just going with five and hoping one of them stays healthy.
Is there a really injury prone back coming out this year in the draft that they would like?
Nick Chubb, right? Yeah. I don't want to call him injury prone. He had the one major injury. And I think we had,
that's what they look for at the position.
Yeah. It seems that way.
They might want to start with drafting some offensive linemen and, you know, maybe paying a little bit for offensive line before I ever think about promoting one of the running backs to be a true buy, because it's just not good.
All right. So if you had to pick one of these guys to be the starter in 2018, it sounds like it's Carson.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. If I have to choose between that pile of people. Yeah. I'll be PC. Yeah, that pile is definitely Carson.
I would think if you could pick up Carson when you can make trades pretty much on the cheap, and he's the number two next year, he's still young.
Sure.
You could probably still get your money out of that.
Yeah. And like you said, they'll draft a guy that'll break, and then Carson will be the starter.
All right, Adam, a couple more teams here. Next up, the Tampa Bay Bucks. Doug Martin, longtime starter there. Peyton Barber played really well in his chance a couple weeks ago. And then Charles Sims, who is entering free agency. Is Martin going to stay with that team?
This is the no-brainer of all no-brainers if you look at contracts, because he's owed $20 million over the next 3 years, and they have zero dead money if they cut him. I think it got voided out whenever he was suspended, so he's an automatic cut. No doubt in my mind, he will not be with Tampa Bay next year unless he comes back for minimum. And truthfully,
do you think he's a starter somewhere?
No, I do not. Okay. He's going to be in a void on my list. He'll be 29. He doesn't look anything like what we thought he would be, you know, 4 years ago when he was having 1,400 yard seasons. It's just not there.
Could the Seahawks sign him?
That would be a good landing spot. And for sure, by week three, you'd have Carson as your starter, so you wouldn't have to worry about it.
I wonder if it's a first-round spot for a running back. Geiser. Yeah. I mean, they have other needs, though.
They've spent so much capital on offense, though. You know, between Howard and Evans and Winston, it's just a lot. You think that at some point they need to just do something a little bit different.
D needs help.
Yeah, they do. I mean, Peyton Barber has been a decent committee back. I think he's shown a little bit over the last few weeks, and he's going to be one of those, you know, exclusive rights free agents. So he'll be back with them next year. I would say that he's safe as far as another dart throw, if you want to go with that. But I don't think the true starters on the team. There's just going to be a lot of that you see the true starter not on the team.
All right, so that's bad news for Martin. Martin and Sims could both be gone from that team. I kind of like Barber as a stash, honestly, just to see how they handle that backfield this offseason. Last one in the NFC and overall, the Washington Redskins, Samaje Perine, Chris Thompson, Rob Kelly. I really liked what we saw from Thompson. You talked about him earlier, and I do think he was actually a little more consistent than Cohen was. Kelly seems like just a guy to me. P. Ryan kind of seems like just a guy to me as well, but I'm definitely interested in your opinion, Adam.
We'll start with Thompson. He's definitely safe. He'll have his role, and he is a very explosive player for what he does. Kelly's safe just because he's owed nothing. It's like $600,000. He'll definitely be back. And then as far as P. Ryan was my fifth-rated running back coming out of college. I liked him a lot. I thought that he was the last of the potential real fantasy starters, and he's had some good film. His biggest problem is that Washington is just they're a mess. It's like sometimes they'll play really well, and then they'll play terrible. And, you know, their line has had a lot of injuries on the offensive line all year. Pryor was a huge bust, and they were definitely hoping that he would be the lead receiver. The problem is Cousins may leave. There's just a lot going on. But if I just look at just talent alone and looking at 2018, I'm going to label P. Ryan upside just because I do think that he has a lot of it. I watched a lot of P. Ryan film just because I was watching Mixon film. And every single time I would watch Mixon film, I would just continue to look and see that Bob Stoops loved P. Ryan. And in these critical situations, he would play him consistently over Mixon. And it just really stood out that, you know, he's a better receiver than what most people credit him for. And I think he's obviously a power back. So he's going to do well on those type of situations. They just need to be healthy, and they need to not be Jekyll and Hyde.
My hunch is that backfield stays exactly the same next year.
I could see it. All three the same. Yep.
And you think P. Ryan would win that starter job?
I think he's significantly better than Kelly. He's just going to have Thompson coming in and taking every third down work that he could possibly get, which will limit his upside as far as PPR, of course. But in a better situation with an office line that was healthy all year, and their office line is pretty good when they're healthy. I think they're reasonable to think that they could open up enough holes for him. I think he's in a situation where he could be, I don't want to say, you know, like high end RB2, but someone that you play every single week.
All right, Adam, that does it for the 32 NFL teams, but I'm going to put you on the hot seat one more time. You've given us a total of 9 elite running backs. I'm going to ask you to rank those. So you've got David Johnson, Elliott, Gurley, Cook, Kamara, Mixon, Bell, Fournette, and Henry. 9 running backs. Give us your rankings of those guys.
All right, so that's a good question. I'll go with my 9 elite, and I'll rank them this way without too much thought. This is obviously subject to change. But like I mentioned, David Johnson is going to be number 1. I think I will echo what Matt was talking about. I'm going to go with Gurley 2, but that's a real close 2 with Zeke being 3. I'm going to move Bell all the way to 4, which is surprising how much I talk well about him or good about him just because of the, I don't know where he's going to play, and he's obviously ran the ball a lot. And then we have the rookies, and it just comes down to, you know, without giving away, Henry's going to be 9, so I'm going to drop him all the way to 9. So we have 5 through 8 that we have to talk about. And I'm going to stick with my preseason rankings and stick with my film through college, and I'm going to say Fournette is going to be 5. I'll stick with Fournette 5. I'm going to go Kamara 6. And then I might shock some people that I wasn't kidding when I talked about Mixon. Mixon's going to be next, and then that's going to be followed by Cook.
Then Ajayi.
I really want to go back. You know, I really want to go back and tell you that I think that Ajayi is elite, but I don't want to. You know what? Let's say it, elite. And yes, Ajayi will be next.
Oh, man. a last minute shift. Yep. All right, so in order, we've got David Johnson, number 1, Gurley, Zeke, then over to Le'Veon Bell, Fournette, Kamara, Mixon, Cook, Henry, and number 10, Jay Ajayi.
I bet I can convince you Ajayi over Henry, too.
Yeah, those could flip. Those could flip. Remember, this is banking on Henry being the starter. I'm not. Right. I may be completely wrong and have him RB9, and he's splitting carries with DeMarco Murray next year. But he's going to be pretty upset. But yeah, I don't think it's going to happen.
I can't stand any more of this Ajayi talk. We've got to end this. Adam, tell our listeners one more time where they can find your work.
Well, find me definitely on Twitter. That's where I'm most accessible. It's at the RB Scout. If you ever want to talk to me, you can DM me. I'm one of the people who leaves their DMs open, so I love people that just ask random questions. I'll try my best to answer them. You can follow us on our website, rbscout.com, which is obviously going to have a lot of content for college coming out soon. And like I mentioned, the podcast is starting back up for our podcast. It's a short one, so you can listen to Ryan and Matt's podcast and my podcast, and you'll still be right around an hour. So that's always a good thing. But other than that, I'm glad that I got this chance to talk to you guys.
Yeah, yeah, we're glad of that as well. Definitely some great information, some interesting rankings, and some targets for players to buy, sell, and grab off the waiver wire this offseason. Thanks again to Adam, and we'll be back next week with more Dynasty Blueprint.